What I wanted to talk about this morning was a little bit of a continuation from last week. I thought that it was appropriate, being that we are about to celebrate Purim, maybe to talk about the Ukrainian crisis through the lens of Megillas Esther. And I know that sounds a little bit strange, but I think that there are many lessons to be learned and many inflection points to think about as we go through the Megillah and we experience the lives that we are going through now. There is something very unusual about Megillas Esther. The Rambam tells us in Hilchos Megillah, Kol Sifrei HaNeviim Mechal HaKsuvim. The Rambam says that all of the writings of the Neviim, Yirmiyah, Yeshayah, Yecheskel, all of the Neviim, Asidin Libata Limos HaMashiach, they will become insignificant in the days of the coming of Mashiach. Except for one notable exception, Megillas Esther. That will not become irrelevant. Megillas Esther is something that is everlasting, and the messages of the Megillah are something that is considered to be timeless. They are immortal. And the Rambam says, Harei kayemes kechamisha chumshei Torah. The Rambam tells us that just like the chamisha chumshei Torah, the Torah itself is never going to become obsolete, so too the compelling and significant lessons of Megillas Esther will be something that will continue to be relevant even after Mashiach will come. And the Rambam is really taking this not only from the Gemara. The Gemara has an amazing comment where we're told in Maseches Megillah that there were many Nevi'im, many male prophets, many female prophetesses, and there we were told, Lo pichsu v'lo hosira amasher kasa b'Torah. Never did a Navi add or take away from any of the mitzvahs HaTorah. The Torah is complete, the Torah is perfect, with one notable exception. The one exception is that they instituted that we have this obligation to read the Megillas Esther, which is not mentioned in the Torah at all. So there is obviously something very uniquely special and very important about the Megillah. And I thought that obviously that means that in every generation as we read the Megillah, we have to make sure that we tap into and understand the lessons of the Megillah as they speak to the generation that we are experiencing now. I'll begin with a pasuk in Parshas Haazinu, where the Torah tells us, Hatsur tamim pa'alo ki chal derachav mishpat. The assumption is that everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is perfect, is righteous. El emunah ve'ein avel, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is referred to as one who is perfect and just and righteous and does nothing wrong. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, do we really need to highlight the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just and right and that everything He does is perfect with the equal balance, the way that things should be in the world? We don't have to say that. We all know that. As ma'aminim, as people who believe, it's axiomatic to what we believe. Why do we have to make mention of it explicitly in the Torah? And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter writes that it doesn't mean what we think on face value. It means so much more. And he says that, take for example a judge who is holding up someone to a court case, and they have to administer some kind of punishment. The person has done something wrong. The judge cannot take into effect too heavily all the collateral damage, all the secondary damage, all the indirect problems that will happen as a result of this person who may have to be incarcerated for the rest of his life. He did something wrong. He has to pay the price. And that is something that is to be understood. Sometimes as parents, we feel the need to tell our children something that may not be perfect in their lives. But we may not always be so meticulous and so careful to do it in the perfect, proper way that they won't be more embarrassed than they should be, that it's not going to impact them in other ways. How do you know what it's going to do to their self-esteem? How could we know? We don't always know the right answers. We try to strike the perfect balance, but it's not always so simple. And that is what the Torah means, that El Emunah Ve'Ein Avel, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu administers a judgment against anyone, when the Ribono Shel Olam makes a decision, he takes into account all of the collateral damage that is going to come about as a result of the decision that he has made, and all the pain and discomfort, and all the torment, and everything that's going to come about as a result of whatever it is that's about to unfold, was taken into account before it was done. Which means, it's a fascinating insight, it means that Rahman al-Itzlan were someone to get sick, and that person is not doing well. But all of us as family members or as friends are negatively impacted as well. That means that all of us were taken into account when this was decided. It means that all of us in some way were deserving of going through this difficult calamity, of this difficult and uncomfortable agony that many of us may be experiencing. And all of that is calculated in advance, and all of that is deliberate. And I think that this is no different. I would hope that all of us have been uncomfortable, that all of us have been a little bit in pain at least, trying to understand what's been going on, but realize that El Emunah Ve'Ein Avel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu obviously took all of us into account when he decided as the Baal HaMelchamos that this is what needs to be done. Why it is, I don't know. But it means that there's something, if it's impacting all of us in a negative way, it means there's something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to impact all of us in a negative way. These past 2 weeks have rattled us to the core. At least I hope they have. Seeing the horrifying images and the live updates and the footage, and you see death and carnage and war and destruction and devastation, every picture that you look at. And we can never compare tragedies, and you can't say this is worse than something else. But in a certain sense, I think this calamity should seem a little bit more intense to us than many others in the past. And that is based on something that I saw in the Megillah last night. We know that Esther is living in her own little bubble. Esther is in the palace. It was not clear that Esther really understood what was going on outside of her little realm. So she was trying to deal with her own problems. She was trying to deal with her own situation. And along the way, Mordechai wants to be sure that she is informed, that she is abreast of all that is happening, the impending crisis to the Jewish community. So he designates a character in the Megillah by the name of Hasach. And the idea is that this person is going to apprise and brief Esther and notify her of all the details of what is about to happen to the greater Jewish community. That is what we're told in the Megillah. And Mordechai sends Hasach, and the Megillah tells us the following. Hasach was given instructions to communicate to her the substance, the details of this edict, of this ordinance that was given over in Shushan against the Jewish people. And not only was he supposed to communicate that message, but he also was handed a letter. He was given the actual physical, tangible edict that was written, was handed over to Hasach, and that was supposed to be given to Esther, laharos es Esther, to give it over to her, ulahagidla, and to explain to her, ulitzavus alea lovo el hamelech lehischaneno ulavakish melefanav al ama. Why was it necessary for Hasach to both communicate orally, to have a conversation with her, to brief her on the situation, but to also give her the paschegen haksav, to give her the physical, the tangible item? And the answer is very simple. Eina dome shmia l'ri'ya. You can talk to someone, you can communicate with them, you can tell them what's going on, but until you see it, it is not the same. The impact that it has, as much as I trust someone, and as much confidence as I have in them, and as much as I believe that it's real, until I have that tangible item where I can feel it, where I can actually see it, where I can have the copy of the edict and the decree of the genocide against the Jewish people, you cannot fully understand what it is that you're dealing with. If you're not on the ground and you don't really see it, you don't understand the urgency or the desperation or the seriousness of what it is that is in front of you. And that is the same that we find by Moshe Rabbeinu himself. Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know, we were told in Parshas Kisisa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs him, Lech reid ki shiches amcha. Your nation has completely unraveled. The Jewish people, you came up here on Har Sinai, I don't know what has happened. They completely contaminated themselves. They've self-destructed. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Lech reid ki shiches amcha. They're gone. Saru maher min aderech. I don't know what's going on. And Moshe Rabbeinu hears it. And there he is standing with the Luchos. And he does nothing. And he does nothing. Until he comes down from the mountain. And the Torah says, Kasher karav el hamachaneh. As Moshe Rabbeinu is approaching, as he comes closer and watches, Vayaris ha'egel u'macholos. And suddenly he's shocked by the reality when he sees they're dancing around an egel. Vayicharaf Moshe, and he's furious. Vayashlech miyadav es haluchos, vayishabaro sam tachas ahar. The shock, the horror, and the trauma didn't set in until he actually sees it with his own eyes. But what do you mean? HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you what was happening. You didn't believe him? Of course Moshe Rabbeinu believed the Ribono Shel Olam. There is no greater messenger than HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. If the Ribono Shel Olam would communicate with any of us, we would believe him. We would hear the message. But it wasn't until Moshe Rabbeinu saw it with his own eyes that he became completely outraged, that he became paralyzed from what he saw. And I believe that this is something that we need to think about. As we watch a war unfold, it's not just that we hear maybe there's something going on. It's not 80 years ago where we don't know what kind of information was actually getting to other parts of the world and how quickly and how detailed. We get the details of exactly what's going on, live coverage. We see videos that are uploaded on Twitter. We see videos that are floating around social media. We see everything that's going on as it's unfolding, as it's happening. Ein adom eshmi el ra'io, realize what's happening. It's not that maybe somebody tells you something's going on. We hear from people. We have global communications. We have the opportunity to speak to people who are in the Ukraine, who are in all of these countries that are neighboring countries and telling us exactly what's happening. We're seeing images. I don't know if you saw the picture after Shabbos of the train station in Ukraine of people trying to get out. It's horrifying. It's horrifying to watch that. The desperation. And that is what Esther needed in order to really understand the severity of the issue. Actually, in Shulchan Aruch it says that the most powerful tefillah that one can make for a chole is when you daven b'fnei ha-chole, is when you daven in the presence of the chole. And why is that? The Shulchan Aruch says, again, it's proven from Yitzchak. Vayetar Yitzchak lenochach ishto. It says when Yitzchak's wife, when Rivka was unable to conceive, so she asked her husband to pray. Both of them are going to daven. And it says that Yitzchak davens in her presence. Why does he daven in the presence of his wife? The answer is because she's the one who's sick. And from there we learn that we should try to daven in the presence of the chola. Obviously not to make them uncomfortable. You don't make a whole declaration. But the reason why in Shulchan Aruch it says is because, in theory, when I hear that somebody's sick, maybe I'll daven, maybe I won't. Maybe I'll think about it, maybe I won't. When I'm standing there and I'm watching what's happening, in fact, the Shulchan Aruch even gives us guidelines as to when we should be mevaker chole. So the Shulchan Aruch says, don't go in the first 3 hours of the day or the last 3 hours of the day. Why? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us in both directions. The first 3 hours of the day, a person wakes up and they're rejuvenated and they're energized. You're going to think the person's doing very well. You're not going to daven properly for them because you're not going to realize how severe the situation is. The last 3 hours of the day, people are so exhausted, you're going to think they're worse than they are. You're not going to daven for them because you're going to say, forget it, I give up on them. There's nothing I can do to pray for them anymore. Says the Shulchan Aruch, go in the middle of the day, at an ordinary time, when they're not too excited, when they're not too tired, when they're not too exhausted. Go at a regular time in the day so you can really have an accurate read on what it is that is happening. And why is that important? Because once you see that, it will impact the way that you react. It will impact the way that you respond. And that perhaps is part of what we need to think about as we watch all of this unfold. There are so many things in our lives that are so mystifying, that are so puzzling. And this situation that we're experiencing now is no different. Who can make sense out of any of this? When you have a brutally impulsive, egotistical, self-absorbed madman who has frozen and terrorized the entire world, everyone is scared to do anything because nobody knows what he's going to do next. The entire world is in a pachad, is in fear. Actually, Rav Asher Weiss called me on Friday to talk about something, and he said, how are you? I said, I'm okay. He said, I don't understand how anyone can say right now that they are okay. So I thought he was going to give it in a speech, you know, the Jews are stuck and whatever. He said, I'm not talking about the Jews. I'm not talking about anything. He said, how are you okay? Why do you not feel that at some point this same crazy, impulsive madman is going to drop a nuclear bomb on the United States? How far is he away from doing that? He's insane. He's crazy. Why do you think that you're safe anywhere in the world right now? Nothing to do with Jews being stuck there. Think about yourself. Think about yourself. How safe are you? How safe are all of us? This is an unbelievable time. I was thinking last night, David HaMelech really was a brave, courageous, and fearless leader. And he was resolute in everything that he did. He had no fear at all. The Pasuk tells us in Tehillim, Gamas ha'ari, gamas ha'dov, hika avdecha. David HaMelech says, I wasn't afraid. I took on the animals, even though the animals are far more powerful than I am. I was never afraid. Gamas ha'ari ve'as ha'dov hika. I killed a bear. I killed a lion. I was never afraid. I did it on my own. However, where do we find that David HaMelech becomes terrified? Where do we find that he becomes panic-stricken? Well, he describes it. Histarta panecha ha'isi nivhal. We say it every day. Histarta panecha ha'isi nivhal means when HaKadosh Baruch Hu hid his face from me, when I became confused with world events, when I couldn't make sense out of what was happening, and it was a time of hester panim, ha'isi nivhal, that's when I was completely aghast, that's when I became totally unsettled, that's when I was disoriented, that's when I had a sense of hysteria because I was experiencing hester panim. Animals don't scare me. A lion doesn't scare me. All of these different enemies that come upon me don't scare me. What scares me is histarta panecha, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu's face is hidden. And that's what the Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim. talks about the frantic husband and wife who are looking for each other. And the pasuk there describes how the woman is running out into the street looking for her beloved, who has come looking for her, but she has missed the opportunity to welcome him back home. And the pasuk there describes akumana ba'asavava ba'ir. It's a description of a extremely anxious woman who is running around the city. Bashvakim of arachovos avaksha esha havanafshi bikashti v'lamitzasiv. You're looking and you're searching and you're trying very hard to find your beloved, and you simply cannot locate, you cannot find that person that you are looking so hard to find. And obviously that is a description of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are times when He looks for us and we're nowhere to be found. There are other times when we look for Him and He seems nowhere to be found. And we ask ourselves, this is so mystifying. How can we understand everything that's unfolding? How can we understand everything that's happening? How could God be involved in such a thing? And that is what I feel is important for all of us to be thinking about. Just think about the story of the Megillah. It's a very beautiful story, but as you read it, it's not something that all came together all at one time. It's something that took 9 years to unfold. And at the time that each of the events unfolded, it was not something that anybody put together or actually understood. We did have a time in the United States not too long ago when people were excited by the news. Why? Because there was somebody in the office of the president who shall remain nameless. We had no idea what tomorrow's front page news was going to be. What was this person going to do next? How interesting is the next front page news going to look more than today? There was some thrill in that. There was something interesting. Think about what the Jews or the community in Shushan felt every single day. You had the most bizarre and irrational king who was leading the country, who just seemed to make decisions that were not connected to anything, that really didn't make sense, that weren't so thought out. And it was like almost a sense of excitement, like what's coming next? What's going to happen? Nobody really knew how anything tied together. So you have this major feast, major celebration, everyone comes, and the most demoralizing thing happens. The queen is murdered in front of everyone. I mean, is there anything more irrational than that? You want to have a fight with your spouse? Go have a fight with your spouse, but in front of the entire country? You're going to kill this woman while everyone is sitting here? It's insane. You go a little further, and against all odds, the most improbable, the most unlikely of circumstances happens, that Esther Hamalka is chosen when she doesn't want to be. She doesn't choose to put on any makeup. She doesn't want to endear herself to Ahasuerus, and yet she is the one who is chosen. Bigson and Seresh, think about that. They attempt a murder against Ahasuerus. What's the likelihood that Mordechai happens to be standing there and he is proficient in many different languages? How many people in Shushan spoke other languages other than Persian? But it says that because Mordechai was a member of the Sanhedrin, and a member of Sanhedrin has to know all the languages, because what if a Chinese comes into the Sanhedrin and wants to give over testimony? Who's going to listen? And what if a French comes in and wants to speak in that language, and we're not going to know how to communicate? So the member of the Sanhedrin has to know everything. And Mordechai happens to be the one who's standing there. They're probably speaking in Spanish or French because they didn't want anyone to understand. And Mordechai says, hey, I'm actually listening to what they're saying. I understand what's happening. Did they not have any FBI agents? Were there no Secret Service at the time? There were no personnel who were there on the lookout for Ahasuerus. Mordechai was the only one. So he probably comes to shul the next morning and says, you're not going to believe what happened yesterday. Happened to be standing somewhere. I overheard two people. I gave over the message to the king. I saved his life. Ooh, wow, so interesting, so amazing. Then you go a little bit further into the Megillah and you find Ahasuerus can't sleep one night. And nobody really understands why. So what does he do? He says, bring me out the Sefer HaZichronos. Is that a normal reaction? You ever did that when you can't sleep at night? Take out the albums, let me start looking through. It's just an inappropriate response. It doesn't make any sense. Absurd. It's absurd. We're used to the story, but none of it makes any sense. I don't think there's any doctor who would say that that's the treatment, that's the remedy for a person who can't seem to get to sleep, who's having sleep issues. And then he says, let's open the Sefer HaZichronos. Let's see, has anyone ever done anything for me? And in the middle of the night, We have to take care of all of this. How about let's wait till tomorrow? Let's look into it a little bit. No, immediately. Everything has to be, you look in the Megillah, Vayavhilu, everything's rushing this, rushing that. It's so unlikely. And it's not until the whole story ends that you go back and you retrace the steps and you begin to appreciate and understand how everything fit together. But over a 9-year period of time, nobody understood that. Nothing fit together at all. And as it was unfolding, there was a sense of shock and horror and confusion. And we need to always remember that there's a far bigger narrative that is developing in everything in our lives. You can't look at different events in isolation. I'm sure that the Jews in Shushan HaBira were looking at each event as it unfolded and asking themselves, how can this possibly be? Mordechai lo yichrev lo yishtachave, is he out of his mind? We're all going to get killed. Mordechai won't just bow down to Haman. I mean, what's it going to cost him already? Just do what you have to do and move on with life. Each moment in isolation really didn't make sense at all, but it's not until you put it all together. And this is why the entire Megillas Esther, we don't have a mention of the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because it was a time of Hester Panim. Because as they were experiencing all of this, they did not see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They did not appreciate His involvement. It didn't seem like He was involved at all. It is true that you find different obscure mentions, hidden references throughout the Megillah to the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but all of them are veiled. All of them go undetected. If you don't have that critical eye to find it, you won't see it. For example, we're told, Yavo HaMelech VeHaman Hayom. We are told that Esther invites the king Ahasuerus together with Haman to a party that she is going to host. Yavo HaMelech VeHaman Hayom is the Rosh HaTevos of Yudke Vavke. So there's a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not outright. Yudke Vavke. So unless you're looking with a discerning eye, unless you have that ability to really look and sift through carefully, you do not see HaKadosh Baruch Hu at all. And it's the same in our lives. If you don't have that discerning eye, you look at world events, you look at everything that's happening, and you have no appreciation. You have no understanding that it's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And some suggest that this is really the explanation for one of the minhagim that we find by the mitzvah Mikra Megillah. When we read the Megillah, we make 3 brachos before the Megillah and 1 bracha afterward. We make a bracha of She'asa Nisim, we make a bracha of She'echiyanu, and we make a bracha of Al Mikra Megillah. That's the mitzvah that we're about to do. So we make 3 brachos to commemorate, to highlight the very special occasion of reading the Megillah. After we're finished, we make a bracha upon the conclusion. Harav es Rivenu, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for fighting our fights, for winning our wars, for saving the Jewish people. Beautiful. Now generally when we make a bracha, we try to make sure that it should be recited immediately, promptly in connection with the mitzvah that we're doing. And yet here, we delay it. Here we postpone. The Shulchan Aruch gives us the halacha in Ilchas Purim, that after you finish reading the Megillah, you do not recite the bracha immediately upon the conclusion. You first wait a few seconds to roll up the entire Megillah back to the beginning, and only then do we say the bracha. Why is that? So the Mishnah Berurah says the reason why is because we don't want to be disrespectful to the Megillah. It's not right that we're just going to leave the Megillah all unraveled like that, and we're going to go ahead and make a bracha. You should first put away the Megillah nicely, and then you should recite the bracha like a mensch. That's the way you should do it. But others suggest maybe there's something more behind that. It's not just because we want to show deference and reverence to the Megillah. It's more than that. It's that now that the story is over, in order to make that bracha and say Harav es Rivenu and thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Yeshua, we have to roll it all back to the beginning. We're going to recount everything that happened along the way and say, wow, everything now makes sense. We're going to string together all the events and realize how all of this fit into a much larger narrative. All of this made sense in order to get us to where we needed to be in the end. But without going back, without having that opportunity to rewind the tape and remind ourselves of everything that led to that moment, we really lack a full and complete all-inclusive perspective, all-inclusive appreciation. And that is why the Gemara tells us, HaKorei es HaMegillah LeMafreya Lo Yatza. If a person reads Perek Beis and then they skip to Perek Hei and they go backwards to Perek Aleph, you do not fulfill your obligation of Megillah. Why? Because you're lacking the sequence of events. You don't understand how to pull it all together. And that's so important. It's so integral to really understanding and appreciating what the miracle is about, to look back at everything. We live at a time, the Gemara says, when we no longer have Ruach HaKodesh. We don't have Nevuah. Anyone who tells you they have Nevuah today, or they have divine inspiration, or Ruach HaKodesh, don't listen to them. Run very far away. The Gemara tells us, Chagai, Zechariah, Umalachi were the last of the Nevi'im. Anyone else who thinks they have Ruach HaKodesh is a charlatan, and they're probably going to charge you a lot of money to tell you all kinds of things. Stay far away from them. We do not have Ruach HaKodesh today. We do not have Nevuah. So that used to be the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicated. It was the way that the Ribono Shel Olam corresponded. It's the way that he conversed with the people, that he gave Nevuah. He gave certain people Ruach HaKodesh, and they communicated those messages directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But a Jew needs to live and experience life today, as we mentioned, with eyes wide open. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has many methods, many modes, many channels of communication. And we need to just change our frequency. We need to just listen carefully and understand what it is that is happening around us and how cogently HaKadosh Baruch Hu is communicating with all of us and how clearly he is communicating, if only we open our eyes wide enough to see and appreciate what his messages are. We know that Ahasuerus sanctions the plan of Haman. Not only does he agree to it, he endorses it. Ahasuerus was very excited about this plan, and he encourages Haman to move along with it. And the Megillah tells us, Vayaser HaMelech es tabato me'al yado. He did not just tell Haman to move ahead with whatever he had devised, but he actually takes off his ring and he hands it to Haman. And at that moment, Vayitna laHaman ben Hamadasa Tzarer HaYudim, he gives it to the arch enemy of the Jewish people. Chazal tell us in Maseches Megillah Daf Yudalid, Gedola Hasaras HaTabas, Yoser Me'arboim Ushmona Neviim V'Shiva Neviyo Shenesnabu Lahem LiYisrael. I know that was a run-on sentence. But that moment, when Ahasuerus gives the ring over to Haman, that moment when he shows that he has his full support behind all that Haman wants to do, that was a more powerful and significant moment than any Nevuah that any of the Neviim had ever communicated to the Jewish people. That was something that was more effective, that was more compelling, more dynamic than anything that a Navi had ever tried to communicate to the Jewish people. Why? Because a Navi stood and screamed from the rooftops and told the Jewish people, God told me this and God said that, and we're going to have a Beis HaMikdash that will be destroyed, and we're going to be kicked out of the land of Israel, and we're going to be thrown out of Yerushalayim, and there are going to be massacres, and nobody changed, and nobody did anything, and nobody paid attention. Along comes Haman, and the moment Ahasuerus gives him over the keys, gives him over the right and the ability to do whatever he wants to the Jewish people, immediately they spring into action. And the Gemara says that that moment was more powerful than all the Nevi'im that ever lived, because that was able to change the Jewish people more than anything else in previous history had ever done. That's the way it's supposed to be. When people look at history, when people look at the experiences of life, and just internalize and understand what it is that's being communicated to them, it's the most powerful message we can get. It's more powerful than any speech anyone will ever give us. Just open your eyes and gain a larger perspective. We find the same idea by Yetzias Mitzrayim. We know the Torah tells us that after the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, they're traveling for 7 days, and then we're told, Uparo hikriv. It says that they turn around, and they see that Paro's army is right behind them. They're approaching, and there's imminent danger. And there's an impending danger, and they're terrified, and they don't know what to do. Chazal tell us on that, it's a medrash in Shemos Rabbah, Paro hikriv doesn't just mean that Paro was approaching, which is obviously what it means, but Paro hikriv es libam shel Yisrael la'avim shebashamayim. It means that Paro was successful in melding our relationship, in furthering to strengthen that relationship between ourselves and the Ribono Shel Olam. Because we looked in front of us and we saw a Yam Suf. We were stuck. We looked behind us and we saw there was no way out on the other side because Paro was approaching. And it was Paro that was the one who was successful in making the Jewish people realize that God was communicating with them. This is what the Medrash tells us. Amar Abrachara, Yafa Haisa HaKravas Paro LeYisrael Mimea Tzomos Etfilos. Paro's chasing after them was more impactful, was more transformational than 100 days of fasting and davening. It was more powerful to them because everyone understood it. Kivan Shiradfu Acharem Varo Asam, when the Mitzrim, when the Egyptians started to run after the Jewish people, everyone was afraid. Vitalue Neam Lamaram, and finally they turned around and said, God, you're the only savior we have left. There's nothing else here. We thought we can rely on the American government. We thought that there's never going to be anti-Semitism again in this country. We thought that we were safe because we have religious liberties and religious freedoms, and now we realize we have nothing. Where does that leave us? Only with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It brings us closer to the Ribono Shel Olam because we realize that we have no other option. When we realize that we're cornered, when we realize we're under attack, when we realize that we're stuck, that is the time when we have the opportunity to become closer with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we live at a time of so much uncertainty, of so much confusion, so much terror and so much pressure all over the world. Who knows what tomorrow's news will bring? But just think about how many communications we've had from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How many? If COVID was not a communication, and you can chalk all of it up to science, and you can say all the different scientific reasons why it is that something happens and why there's a new wave and why some countries are better and some communities are worse and why some who are vaccinated seem to respond this way and some who are vaccinated respond that way and some who are unvaccinated don't have a problem at all. We can come up with all kinds of theories. But you miss the communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Ribono Shel Olam realized that we missed the communication. So he communicated with us again and sent Omicron, a whole new set of problems that we had to deal with. And once again, we turn to science and try to figure out how are we going to beat the system and how are we going to get around it, which we have to do. We live in a scientific world. We live in a world of realism. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has communicated with us. But communications don't always go through so smoothly. So, much to our shock, along comes Lag BaOmer last year. Communication. How many times can the Ribono Shel Olam scream in our faces and communicate with us? So we don't have Ruach HaKodesh. So we don't have Nevuah. We have more than that. We have the Ribono Shel Olam himself screaming and yelling in our faces. I just spoke in Florida the other day. I was in and out for one day, but I took a walk there. And I pass by the building in Surfside that is no longer there. It is so, I guess awe-inspiring is the wrong word, because there's nothing inspiring about it at all. I was awestruck when I saw it. Just a huge gaping hole. Is none of that a communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? But we're on a wrong frequency. We're not getting it. Someone just said to me last week, finally things were quiet. Do we really need Ukraine? The answer is, yes, we obviously did need Ukraine because finally things are quiet and we still don't realize that anything needs to change. So yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to continue to communicate with us. It's what the Gemara says in Sota Daf Mem Tes, the last daf in Sota, that Biikvasa the Meshicha, Ein Lanu Al Mila Hisha'ein Ela Alavinu Shebashamayim. In the end of days, there will be nothing left other than to believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because you can't trust anybody. Because you're not safe anywhere. And we all know that to be true. There's nothing safe about the world that we live in. It's terrifying. We thought we were safe living in a building. Whoever thought that buildings in the United States of America, in an affluent neighborhood where they have beautiful buildings and wonderful people living there, who would think the building would collapse and implode on itself? Who would ever imagine such a thing? Who would imagine any of this? And yet, it's the reality that's in front of us. And that is the communication of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On Rosh Hashanah, we recount the painful, heart-wrenching story of Chana, who was unable to have children. It's the Haftorah on Rosh Hashanah that we read. And the Psukim there describe how along the way, Penina, who is her co-wife, is mocking her, is degrading her, is scorning her for not having children. So the Gemara explains that obviously she was L'shem Shamayim Niskavna, whatever the idea may be, but she felt very dejected by her co-wife, who she used to have a very nice relationship with. And I would imagine that she cried. I would imagine it was extremely painful. As anyone who has ever spoken to any individual couple who is struggling with this, of course it's painful. And of course they cried. But then we're told that her husband Elkanah happens to pass by her and he notices that she's crying hysterically. And he says, Chana, lama tivki? Why are you crying? What a strange question. Why do you think I'm crying? You know what's happening in my life. You know that every other one of my peers has been blessed with children. And here I am. And my dreams have not been fulfilled. What kind of question is that? Why am I crying? Of course I'm crying. And we're told that he turns to her and he says, it's not so bad. You have me. And you're very sweet, Elkanah. But you missed the mark. So you don't get it. I want to have children. You're a lovely husband. I love you to death. But you're not in the place of children. And immediately after this exchange, we're told that Hannah couldn't hold herself together anymore. And we're told that at that point, Vatakam Hannah, Vatispalal al Hashem, Uvachosiv Keh. We're told that at that moment, Hannah breaks down and cries to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vahaya ki her basil his spalal lefnei Hashem, Ve'eli shomer espiha. And as she's crying, Eli was standing next to her, for those who are familiar with the story. Vahidit kufas hayamim, Vatahar Chana Vatelet Bein. And suddenly after that encounter, she becomes pregnant and she has a child. What happened? What changed? Some of Farshim explain, it's at that moment that she hit rock bottom. Before that moment, she thought, I've lost my co-wife, my family doesn't understand me, at least my husband understands what I'm going through. At least he can really commiserate with me. He's in this with me. When she hears that comment from her husband and he says, it's not so bad, you have me. She realizes, my husband himself, as much as he loves me, has no idea what I'm living through. He just doesn't understand it. He doesn't appreciate it. I'm all alone. It's at that moment that she finally turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, it's just me and you. There's nothing else I have left in the world. There's no one who understands me. And it's at that moment when she feels the closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're told that her prayers were answered. Sometimes that's the way it goes. Sometimes that's what happens. Rav Soloveitchik writes a very similar comment in his Chumash on Sefer Shemos. He says, the Pasuk describes how Paro dies, and immediately after that it says, the Jewish people cried out, Vatal Shavasam El HaElokim, and the Ribono Shel Olam accepted their prayers. And the whole process of Geula began at that moment. As Rav Soloveitchik, this was the first time anyone cried. You're sitting enslaved in Egypt. Horrific conditions. Backbreaking labor. Your children are being murdered. Nobody cried? This is the first time that the Torah records that the Jewish people thought it would make sense to cry? What happened until now? And the answer, he says, is they all had in their minds that Paro is awful. He's an evil dictator. At some point, someone's going to assassinate him. Someone's going to kill him. One of the oligarchs of Egypt is going to be paying money to murder him. And at some point, he'll be out of the picture and we'll be fine. We'll have diplomacy. We'll figure out how to negotiate. We're good negotiators. We'll make a deal with the new king. We'll make sure we're on good terms and everything will be okay. And they were hanging on to that sense of trust that this is only a temporary issue, because at some time in the near future we're going to figure out how to get ourselves out of this misery. What happens next? Paro dies. And what happens immediately after that? A new king comes to power and everything stays the same. It's at that moment that they realize we give up. Everything that we dreamt of, all that we thought was going to happen, is not happening. That means we're stuck. Means there's no one else in our world other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. With all our politics and with all our negotiating and with all our government relations commissions that we have and with all the negotiating in Washington that we do and with all of the personalities that we interact with and all the good things that our community does to strengthen the bonds and the ties between government agencies and our community, we forget that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who is going to make the story of our Geula unfold. And it's at that moment, writes Rav Soloveitchik, when they realized that nothing changed and that nothing would change, unless they began to realize that it's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu that needs to make the change happen. Vatal shavasam el ha'elokim, out of desperation, when they realized there was no other option other than to rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is that precipitated the geula. I read something so poignant, so penetrating from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks in one of his letters. He says, after the Holocaust, we need God more than ever. For there is no limit to the evil men may do when they no longer believe anything is sacred. It's at moments like that we rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu even more. Because we realize, after experiencing so much in life, that there is no one we can rely on. There's no one we can trust. Can have the governor of New York. Look what happens. So everyone was trying to make relationships. Oh, we're going to negotiate this for our community and that. Look what this person is. Look what happens. These are the people we're putting our trust in. And of course, we need to have relations and we need to make sure that we do whatever we can to advocate for our community. But we cannot forget that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the ultimate involvement in this entire narrative and all that happens. So that's why the Gemara tells us, Im roa adam sheyisurim ba'im alav, if somebody sees, if somebody notices that they're going through some kind of adversity, that they're having some kind of hardship, yifashvesh b'maisav, it's an opportunity for introspection. It's an opportunity for some self-examination, for some self-reflection, some soul-searching. That's what the Gemara says we're supposed to do. I always find it interesting that when things like this happen, we all get messages, should be Mekabel Shabbos 5 minutes early. Why? I don't know. What's the connection between being Mekabel Shabbos 5 minutes earlier and the Jews in Ukraine? I have no idea. Everyone says, light an extra candle. Why? Why should I light an extra candle this Shabbos? Can anyone explain it to me in simple layman's terms? That's the language that I speak. Why should anyone light an extra candle this Shabbos for the Jews in Ukraine? We should all say Pita Maktores from a klaf. Why? So maybe there are skulas, maybe there are things, and maybe these things are nice to do. Maybe there are explanations, but it's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara does not say, light an extra candle. The Gemara does not say, you should go ahead and be Mekabel Shabbos 5 minutes early. It does not say, read Pita Maktores from a klaf. What the Gemara does say is, spend 5 minutes thinking about your life. Forget the extra candle, taking Shabbos the same time you do every week. Instead, I suggest, spend 5 minutes this Friday night, when it's quiet in your house and your phone is off and your computer is not showing you any new emails, spend 5 minutes thinking about your life. Spend 5 minutes thinking about your relationships. Spend 5 minutes with yourself, realizing who you are. Instead of doing all of these quick fixes that may or may not work, but that are not sanctioned by Chazal. It's much easier to light an extra candle than to sit for 5 minutes in solitude and look inside of ourselves and have that uncomfortable few minutes doing something, an exercise that we never do. So the Ramchal writes it so powerfully. The Ramchal actually says in the Mesilas Yesharim, and I was so compelled when I saw it because I felt it was so accurate to what I'm feeling. The Ramchal writes in the Mesilas Yesharim, listen to his words. Achas metachbulos hayetzer hara. One of the tricks, one of the ideas of the Yetzer Hara in our world is lahachbid avodasa b'tmidos al libos b'nei ha'adam, to make us feel so overwhelmed and inundated by good things to do. How paradoxical. So you get 1,000 emails a day to help the Jews in Ukraine. And we're so busy trying to figure out, should I help this way? Should I give money to that? Should I give money to this? But I don't know. Is it legitimate? Let me watch a video. Let me see. How are they presenting? What are they presenting? What's really happening there? How many buses are they getting out? And how many people are actually getting through? And all of that is nice. And we're so overwhelmed and so inundated with good things to do. And we don't know exactly how to get enough of it. Ad, writes the Mesilas Yesharim, Ad shelo yishar lahem revach lehizbonin ulehistakel be'ezah derechim holchim. He makes us so busy figuring out all the good things that we need to do and how many skulas we're going to be busy with and how many challah bakes we're going to be a part of and how many afreshos challahs we're going to do in the schus of this that we don't have a second to think, what are we doing? And why are we doing this? Let me read that again. Ad shelo yishar lahem revach lehisponen, until they don't have a space in their mind to think, lehistakel, and to look carefully, be'eza derechim holchim, are you even traveling on the right highway? You're going so quickly. You're over the speed limit. You're so overwhelmed. You don't even know whether you're going in the right direction, because you've never sat down and thought about it. Ki yodeahu, because it is known, she'ilulei hayusamim libam kimat kad al darcheihem, because he knows, were we to turn around for even one moment and spend a little bit of time looking inside of ourselves, vaday she'miyad hayimaschilem lihinachim imaseim, we would start asking, whoa, this is all a big distraction. And I'm really missing the real essence of what life is supposed to be about. It's like they say, sometimes we're so busy making a living that we don't leave any time to live. That's what I feel. We're so busy helping the Jews in Ukraine that we're not even helping them. That we don't even realize what's happening. That we don't think about anything. And this is what we find by Yonah. As we know, Yonah was on a boat and there's this hurricane or some kind of major storm. Ruach gadol el hayam, v'haniyah chishva lihishaver, and the pasuk says that the boat was about to capsize, and all of them would have lost their lives, all the sailors who were there. Vayomru isha reyehu, these were not a community of Jews who were there. These were non-Jewish sailors. Yonah was the only Jew there. Vayomru isha reyehu means one turns to the other, and what do they say? One turns to his friend and he says, L'chu v'napila goralos v'neida b'shalmi hara hazos lanu. Let's try to figure out who was the cause of this hurricane. When was the last time that there was a natural disaster and you asked yourself, we need to figure out who is the cause of this disaster. We need to figure out what is it that someone in our community has done that has made the price of gas go up to $7, right? I was told at the end of the week that's where we're going to be. Right? Maybe it was CNN, I don't know. So, whoever asked such a question, when something crazy happens in your life, you start turning around and asking, Bishalmi harazos, we really need to think seriously, how did this happen? And they all talk to each other, and this one says, it's not me. The other one says, not me. And Yonah finally says, well, I guess I'll have to come forward and be honest. It is me. Bishali hasar hazeh. It's the way life needs to be lived. It means even the non-Jew in the days of Yonah understood that life events were a communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was so obvious to the non-Jew who lived then that if there's a hurricane that never happens, there's a reason for it. And we have to get to the bottom of it. We need to figure out why this is happening. And we need to take care of the problem and fix it. This is what the Navi Yirmiyah writes in the second parak. The Navi Yirmiyah was living at the time of Churban Beis HaMikdash. And he was describing how HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends one message and another, and he's trying to give communication to the Jewish people at the time, Shuvu midarkechem, that if things don't change, we're going to be bereft of a Beis HaMikdash, we're going to be in exile out of Yerushalayim and out of Eretz Yisrael. And finally, the Navi Yirmiyah writes, Lashav hikisi es b'neichem, musar lo lakachu. It was really a waste, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. Lashav hikisi es b'neichem. Why did I bring them COVID and Omicron and Lag BaOmer and Surfside and Ukraine? What a waste. Ki musar lo lakachu. Nobody paid attention. So what was the point? It was God's communication, but nobody's listening. So why communicate if you have no audience to communicate to? It's exactly what David HaMelech says in Tehillim. Al tihi kisus kiferet ein havin. You cannot live life on autopilot. We cannot live life unless we see and understand and think about all that is happening around us and all the time and internalize the messages of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to communicate. That is what David HaMelech told us. Al tihi kisus kiferet ein havin. Animals are sometimes whipped. They don't internalize the message. They just do what they're supposed to do. If their master makes them look forward and keep walking, that's what they do. They don't ask questions. They don't take a moment to think about it and to understand the implication of what's being asked of them. There's a lot more to say on this topic, but I think as we read the Megillas Esther this year, keep your eyes open. What I did yesterday was I just read through the Megillah one extra time with an eye to what is happening currently in our world. None of this was chidushim today. It's reading psukim in the Megillah. And it's just having an opportunity to tap into the messages, the eternal messages that the Megillah share with all of us in every generation. And an opportunity to give ourselves a little bit more of a perspective on what exactly is happening. On what are we supposed to be doing? On how should we be internalizing and understanding everything that's happening in our world, everything that we're experiencing? To remember that if any of this is causing us a sense of anxiety or a sense of pain, it means that that's exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. Because he's an El Emunah Ve'Ein Avel. Tzadik V'Yasher Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took all of us into account when making this Gzeira. The Ribono Shel Olam wanted all of us to feel it, obviously. Ein Adam Mashmi'a L'Re'iya. We see it every day. We feel it. We understand it. It's palpable. It's so much in front of our faces. And our job, maybe we'll continue next week because there's so much more to say, but our job is to really appreciate and understand what it is that's happening, to look with eyes wide open, to live with eyes wide open, and to have the opportunity to then bring ourselves to further strengthen and rely on our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki ein lanu al mila hisha'ein, ela al avinu shem ha'shamayim. I wish everyone